Welcome, gentle people of Earth, to Dual Wielding episode 123. We're finally back to numbers after taking 2 months off without numbering them for our Games of the Generation series. You should check that out. Last week we ended it with our top 7 games of this generation, and it was a fun list and actually a pretty civil conversation. But because we've been doing that for the past 2 months, I figured we'd come back and really, it just worked out either way. There's not much news to talk about. I guess you want to spend an hour talking about failing hardware at launch, which isn't news. So we came back with months and months of video game impressions that we haven't talked about. There's new consoles, there's new games, and everybody has something to talk about. But before we get this, introduce our panel. We have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have Jason.
Hello, everyone.
So, while we have a lot of new games to talk about, we're actually going to kick it off with Jason, who has a new system to talk about.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm chewing. yeah, I got the PlayStation 4 last week. And, I don't know, what do you guys want to know? It's,
Start from the beginning.
well, it began with a day one patch, of course, that enabled most of the functionality, and then there was another firmware update this week, so just like the PS3.
I mean, that wasn't so bad for you, because you got yours a day early, correct?
Correct, yeah, actually,
so you didn't...
as long-time listeners will know, I actually work for Sony, so I was able to get one the day before release. And so, yeah, when the day one patch wasn't an issue at all because there was no one online.
Yeah.
So that was quick. The second firmware update, I think it was on, like, this past Thursday, was a little weird because my brother started downloading it for me while I was at work. And it said it was going to take, like, 3 hours. And 3 hours later when I got home, it still said 2 hours. And then it failed. And it was only, like, it's like 300 megabyte patch. And but then when I restarted the download, it took like 5 minutes to download and install. So I don't know. Apparently, certain servers you get are just so stressed out that, I don't know, something like that. I was trying to Google it, and people were saying they would delete the patch and start over, and they'd get much faster times. I also had a weird issue patching Need for Speed Rivals. They had their day one patch was like 86 megabytes, and... it took like an hour, whereas Battlefield 4, which is also an EA game, had a 600 megabyte day one patch and took 5 to 10 minutes. So there's something wonky going on with some of the servers for sure. But
I also imagine it probably has to do with how many people are on it. It's, you know, you might get be getting at a peak time versus non peak time and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. And the first weekend...
It's nice to know the servers can be fast, unlike with the PS3.
Yeah. So, I mean, when things are working well, things are working really well. And fast is kind of a good word to describe the system in general. Everything is just so instant. I mean, being able to... You suspend any like game... it instantly goes back to the dynamic menu, which is the new replacement for the XMB. You know, loading times are generally faster, with some exceptions. Like Killzone, you boot it, and you're on the main menu in, you know, a matter of seconds. Like, it's so instant. There's not even splash screens. There's just, you know, the Gorilla logo when it first is starting up, and then you're there. Like, it's pretty impressive. And everything in the menus is equally fast. Everything just feels so fast compared to PS3 and 360, where I always feel like there's always that little bit of lag with everything. So that's pretty nice. As far as actual games, was there anything else you guys want to know about the system before?
Well, you're going to transition into games, and I wanted to know about this process, because if retail and digital, there's like some weird system in place here as far as installing and playing games goes. So how does that work?
All right, so when you insert a disc into the PS4, it instantly starts installing the like initial payload or whatever. And that process takes about 30 seconds or so, 30 seconds to a minute. And once that chunk installs, it's bootable. Depending on the game, it'll be different what happens from there. Like, Need for Speed and Killzone were... Oh, no, Need for Speed was instantly playable. Some games have, like, a longer install time to install the rest of the disc. For example, NBA 2K14 took a really long time to install for some reason. But they have, like, a quick game you can play while the rest is installing. So you don't have the full set of modes or teams, but you can play Spurs versus Heat. And, like, by the time it got to halftime of that game, the rest of the game was installed. And Battlefield was kind of similar. It installs the campaign first, and the campaign installs pretty quick, so you can jump into the campaign while the multiplayer chunk's installing. And I think Killzone's the same way, too. So installing is definitely... It's this weird thing. Obviously, you know, like on PC, games are installed all the time, like for decades, but... it's kind of a new thing for consoles. So far, it hasn't really been something that has been that annoying or gets in the way. Obviously, hard drive space is going to be my biggest concern. I think I've already used up a pretty good chunk of my hard drive. I think I have like half of it left or so.
And how many games is this?
Several. So I got Killzone, Need for Speed Rivals. So, down free with PlayStation Plus, I downloaded Warframe and Blacklight Retribution, which are both free to play. And I also have Madden on my system because my friend brought it over. So, I have a good amount of games on it, but it's still, you know, I've had my system for a week or even, you know, a day at the time. And the hard drive space, I mean, we've all predicted this was going to be the case. And obviously, like, during the lifespan of the console, you know, users are going to have to manage their space, which is annoying. And just as a quick tangent, I'm really surprised to hear that apparently the Xbox One doesn't even have a way to tell how much free space you have left, which is crazy. I'm sure they're going to patch that in, but, you know, hard drive management is definitely going to be a thing this console generation. As it was last generation for people, you know, who got 20 gigabyte 360 launch systems.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Pretty much useless these days.
Yeah, I think that was... I think the idea was that we're starting off with, 200 times the size? Well, I guess not 20 times the size. And we're kind of running through them really quickly. Because even with 20 gigs, my 20 gig lasted me a couple of years.
Yeah.
Because all you really needed were, like, save files and stuff, and the occasional downloadable title, which they did keep a cap on.
Right.
They don't seem to have that this time around. Like, launch games are 50 gigs. And
yeah, and the mandatory installs of discs, too. I mean... Let me just browse through here real quick. Like, Need for Speed, 16 gigs. Battlefield, 35 gigs. Killzone, 39 gigs. So these are huge chunks coming out of your hard drive, you know? Like, NBA 2K, 45 gigs.
And I guess the other thing, as you noted, is that this isn't just digital. This is retail and digital, which is really what's going
correct.
To become... So it's not like you can get around it by not installing these games.
I think the first time that if I get a PS4, the first thing that I would do is like go to the nearest computer shop and buy a 1 terabyte hard drive for it because
yeah. So that's another thing is on PS4 at least you do have the option of swapping out just like PS3 you can swap out for a standard laptop size hard drive, and so you can theoretically expand it. You know. As much as you want, and I did watch it. I haven't done it myself yet. I'm probably not going to bother until like space actually becomes an issue for me. But I am planning on doing it eventually. And I did watch a video on it just to see what the process was. And it's pretty easy. You just slide off the glossy chunk of the system, and there's like one screw holding the hard drive case in place, and then a few more screws in that case that hold the actual hard drive. So it seems like a pretty easy process. Even easier than swapping out a hard drive on a PC. So that's good. And then all you have to do is download the firmware from Sony's website, and then it installs that, and you're good to go. And obviously, with PlayStation Plus, you have online storage of all your data. So, you know, as far as there's And something I just thought of, I could just plug, once I do upgrade hard drives, I could just slide my old PS3 hard drive right into my desktop and suddenly have another 500 gigs. That's pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah. But, and I guess the launches have been confusing, so, but you can't use an external hard drive. You have to replace
Correct.
It, actually.
Correct. Okay. The Wii U is currently the only game console supporting external storage, which is crazy. Go Nintendo. Being ahead on something technological.
The thing is, though, is the Wii U needs it. Like,
yeah, the Wii U does need it.
Well, I mean, it does and it doesn't, because, again, this is kind of going back to the Xbox 20 gig from last gen, is that you don't have to install anything, so you don't use up the space
Correct.
As you choose to. But if you do decide to go digital, yeah, it eats up space really quickly.
Yeah.
I think certain game launch games like 20 gigs, which is more than the 8 gig, of course, and most of the 32 gig.
Right. And I will say, you know, I didn't really download digital games as far as full like retail titles on my 360 at all, because space is an issue. And even on PS3, the only ones I did download were the free ones from Plus. I'm someone who generally prefers, you know, having physical media. One reason is because I frequently trade in games, so I can buy lots more games. excuse me. But I will say that, you know, having all your installs kind of lined up on the OS and having everything else move so quickly, it gives, like, significant incentive for someone to buy digitally, because you can so instantly just switch between games. And it will close whatever, which game is running currently to switch to a new one. But, like, to the process of getting up and switching on a disc, which I never thought twice about, really, last generation, is suddenly, like, this weird, like, annoying thing. Man, like, this longer than it should. So, yeah, the only thing is, since it installs so quickly from a disc, that's my main thing. Sometimes it'll download fast, sometimes it won't. But, like, especially when it comes to space management, if I have to re-download something, that's kind of annoying. Whereas, sliding. What else? Oh, yeah, so also on PS4, obviously sharing and social feature, the very first, and I should know what these are called. I guess tile. I'm gonna go with tile. is a feed of all your friends' activities, like what they've done, which games they've played, what trophies they've unlocked, and certain games that support it will also add, you know, specific actions you do in the game. And then there's also ads from the PlayStation Store and stuff. And yeah, so that's a pretty cool little snapshot. And if you go to into every single game has a live area, much like the Vita. So you highlight any game's tile. Again, I don't know, I'm gonna go with tile, but you get a view of its live area, and then you can kind of tap down on the D-pad or the control stick. And it kind of expands, so you get a view of all the live tiles, you get a summary of the trophies you've unlocked and your most recently unlocked trophy, you get an activity feed that's specific to that title for you and your friends, you get if there's any items on the PlayStation Store, they can, like, you know, like Battlefield Premium, for example, is down at the bottom. So it's I find this, when you like go down from any of the tiles, it'll bring up all this other information, and I find it, and it's obviously dependent on an internet connection. So when you're not connected to the internet for whatever reason, the OS, the dynamic menu feels kind of bare bones almost, because it loads there's so much information you get with it on, and I feel like it's a cool, you know, little feature, and it's something that just kind of illustrates how connected these consoles are. So yeah, let's see what else is cool in here. Obviously, there's also In-game, there's a big emphasis on sharing. There's a whole share button on the controller and everything, but that I will get to a little bit later. And one thing that's kind of nice is the store is kind of part of the OS now, kind of like it is on the 360, and I assume the Xbox One. So whereas on the PS3, you had to like basically launch its own application, and it's kind of slow to load. It's much faster, just fitting with the whole theme of the system being just faster in general. It's much faster to browse a store. You can browse a store while you're playing a game or doing something else. And it looks almost identical to the redesigned PS3 store. Like I said, everything is just much faster on it. As far as actual games,
go with Killzone first.
Okay, you want to start with Killzone?
I want to hear about Killzone.
Oh, that's fitting since it's the first party, big exclusive. I know Martin was really excited about it. Number one thing with Killzone is it is a gorgeous game. Just absolutely gorgeous game. And it just angers me so much that every single ad for it is some stupid live-action skit with some cheesy song and just these, like, cosplay costumes. And it's like, just do what Battlefield does and show gameplay footage because it's so beautiful. Like, it's by far the best-looking game I've played or seen so far on the next-gen systems.
That's an AG-specific phrasing.
Well, okay, it's by far the best game I've ever seen, ever. I mean, I'd say on the next-gen systems because they're obviously the most powerful. But and I don't have the most powerful PCs, so I guess I can't comment on how it compares to recent PC games set to Ultra. But like as far as console gaming goes, like if you want to see like what the next generation is capable of, play Killzone. Now, if you're actually playing
it's no longer next gen, it's this gen now, it's current gen, they're both
new right, gen, okay, new gen.
It's not even new, it's old now.
They're new things.
I just, it's a pet peeve, I know it's semantics, but technically since we're in next gen, it's not next gen would be what
yeah, I mean...
But
people are going to refer to that for a couple of years, probably.
I was going to say, I'll accept it through the end of the year because they are, like, the Xbox, as of this recording, is like 24 hours old. So it's not that old. But it's just, I saw somebody say current next gen systems yesterday. I'm like, that's an odd, confusing sentence, phrase. Anyhow, go back to Killzone. Did we use him again?
Oh, yeah, so Killzone. As far as the actual game itself, the story starts out on this completely ridiculous premise. And just for some context, I did not play more than 20 minutes of any previous Killzone game. So I was pretty much driving into this fresh. But from what I understand, the Hellgas homeworld was destroyed at the end of Killzone 3. For some reason... the VSA, which is like the quote-unquote normal humans, invite the Hellgas to take half of their city and live there. And they just evict their own citizens, and there's no warning. Like, the game starts out during the process of the Hellgas occupying the city, and this father is, like, escorting this kid, to safety, and they're, like, hiding, and, like, it's just, like, it makes no sense whatsoever. Like, here... we destroyed your planet, have half of our city. You're our mortal enemies. We've been fighting a war with you for however many years. But just take half of our city and, kill all our citizens that are in that half while you're at it. Like, who cares? Like, it's completely brainless. And unfortunately, while the story does improve, it never gets that great. Towards the end, it starts to kind of twist on your expectations of... what the world of Killzone is as far as, I don't, like, instead of there being just, like, the Hellgas are bad and the VSA are good and you're just going to shoot these space Nazis, like, it gets a lot more gray, if that makes sense. Things blend together. The only thing is it's very, very heavy-fisted. There's zero subtlety. It's just, like, you know, it beats you over the head like, hey, we're exploring moral gray zones. Like, and it's just kind of, but it's like lazy storytelling. And also, the game itself is, well, the AI is terrible. Killzone kind of encourages you to play a little stealthily. After all, you are a shadow marshal. Kind of sounds like you should be stealthy, and you can do some pretty cool, like, execution moves. But as soon as you alert one guy to your presence, every single person in the room knows exactly where you're at. No matter if you move, no matter if you go run away and hide, every single person knows exactly where you're at. And, you know, it's just brainless AI that is in every first-person shooter for the most part, other than, you know, Halo probably is the only one with good AI that I can think of. And it's just, it's just not good. And, you know, the guns, which again look beautiful, and they feel pretty good, and some of them have pretty cool alternate fires and all this stuff, there's just not a lot of variety in terms of actual function. So I found myself sticking to pretty much the same two guns the whole time, one of which you can't even swap out. So you can only carry two guns, but you're stuck with one. No matter what, it's like your Shadow Marshal gun. It's like, okay, whatever. I mean, it's a good gun, so it's not like the worst thing in the world. But, you know, I like to go, you know, a long-range gun and a short-range gun usually. And instead, I can only swap out one of my guns.
What is it? Like, is it short-range, long-range?
It's an assault rifle, so it's kind of medium-range. And it's alternate fire mode. Brings up a scope, and it's like a charge shot. So again, it's pretty cool. And you also have this little drone that you control with a touchpad, which at times I almost feel like they put in just to use the touchpad. But it's not like that fancy of an integration. It's just you swipe up or swipe down to change modes or left and right. And you can tell it to attack or throw up a shield or stun enemies that have shields, so it takes off their shield. The one cool thing is the fourth function is a zip line. So if you're pretty much anywhere in the world or anywhere in the game where you have an elevated, where you are is elevated, you can zip line down to a lower function. And certain parts of the games, this is really cool where there's a lot of verticality, but there's also a lot, large parts of the games that are just in hallways and stuff, or, you know, just in flat locations. So obviously you can't use it there. But it does mix up how you move a little bit in a way that's different from other shooters. And my first impression of the gameplay was that it's kind of a cross between Halo and Call of Duty, where, you know, you've got the sci-fi-ness of Halo and the enemies are a little bit bullet spongy, you know, like Halo. And the first real level, at least, is a more open design, so you can approach it the way you want, like a Halo. But then they, you know, it's military, and it's, you know, aim down the sights, and like I said, stupid AI and stuff, like, and set pieces, like Call of Duty. And I initially did not like this mix at all. It did grow on me by the end, but again, it's not the best shooter, but it's definitely the prettiest. There is one amazing segment that I want to call out specifically, though. This one level, you start out in space, in orbit, and then you basically skydive to the surface. You start with like this vehicle that, you know, is like a heat shield basically, and you drop through the atmosphere, and then you're trailing a ship that's damaged, that's crashing on the planet. So you have to avoid the pieces that are breaking off, because they're basically meteors at that point, and their smoke trails are superheated. But you have to stay close enough to the ship so you can see where it's going and all the clouds and everything. And it's just completely seamless, no loading. You skydive from orbit in space down to the surface. And when you're on the surface, that part's a little longer, too, because you're trying to avoid crumbling structures and stuff. And it was so exhilarating. So exhilarating, and it really impressive on a technical level, just that kind of scale.
It does sound fun. It sounds, I think, free-falling. Well, I mean, not free-falling, but in games, it's usually done really well. It's a great sensation.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was your favorite game of the that you have so far?
I, like many others, found Resogun to be the most enjoyable, which again is a free game with PlayStation Plus. It's just so, it just like scratches that itch. You know, there's always stuff blowing up and like bright lights and like it's just it's so, you know, it's kind of like how when you guys were talking about Mario last week on the Game of the Generation podcast, like those feelings of joy and excitement, like that's how I feel playing Resogun. Like everything is made up of tiny little blocks. They call them like bloxels instead of like pixels. So when something blows up, it just explodes into a million little blocks that all have physics, and they crumble and bump into each other and other ships, and it's really cool. And the level in the background kind of degenerates, and it's a twin stick shooter like Geometry Wars, but on a 2D plane that is cylindrical. So the levels are like giant cylinders, and then you play on like a 2D plane, and basically the objective is just destroy all the ships. And then there's also I think 10 humans on each level, and destroying certain ships that pop up throughout the level will release one of the humans from their like cages, and then you have to take them to safety. And that the human part is optional; it's like bonus points and trophies and stuff. But man, that game is just so fun.
It looks really cool, actually.
I mean, it sounds cool, but honestly, looking at it, I have no idea what's going on half the time. Like, I just see stuff exploding into colors. And it looks cool.
Yeah, and I didn't either watching a video, and they don't really explain it very well.
I guess it's a thing that you get
so
when
you kind of
the
have
game
to play to figure
it
out. But
yeah,
once you do figure it out, it's really cool.
Okay, I'm just like, I just look at it and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, again, too, like, the game does a really poor job of explaining it. I don't think it explains it at all, really, but or maybe I just skipped through the menus really fast. I don't remember. But it's once you do play it, like it does all kind of fall into place once you get used to it. So I don't want to take up all our time, so I'll just run through the other games really quick. NBA 2K14, gorgeous. Like, oh my god, the player models look insanely real.
Especially if you compare it to NBA 14.
Yeah, it's pretty much, you know, in stark contrast, like, because, I mean, it just, it looks so real. Like, it looks real. I mean, you guys, anyone listening to this should just Google NBA 2K14 PS4 or Xbox One, and you can just see for yourself. I mean, it's incredible. The gameplay itself, pretty much identical to 2K the past few years, as far as I can tell, which is to say it's a very good basketball sim. And I haven't spent too much time with it, but it's fun. You know, if you like basketball, definitely get this game. If you like graphics, get this game. That was my free game I got from Amazon's Buy 2, Get 1. Madden is less impressive. It looks sharp. I actually was playing it on PS4, my brother had it running on his 360, so we had a direct comparison. And, you know, it's definitely a step up. It's a lot cleaner. Things are shinier, but it's not the, oh my god, wow factor that NBA is or Killzone is. Like, that definitively next-gen kind of look. It's more like, yeah, it's a better-looking version of Madden as you know it. But, strangely, it plays worse. Everything has this weird, like, super speed to it, and it's really hard to explain without seeing or playing it in person, but, like, everything is just weirdly fast, like, unnaturally fast. Just the way players move and the way they tackle, like, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good example. I was going to say when you watch, like, a movie at 120 hertz, and it's got this, like, weird, you know, like, look to it. Like, it's just not right. It's kind of like that.
Cheap soap opera look. I hate that.
Yeah, it's not exactly that, but it's kind of, you know, it's off in that way, if that makes any sense. And it probably doesn't, but, and, like, we had to turn the game speed down just so it would look okay. And then, even then, like, it's just, for some reason, under the hood, it's just not run as well. Like, the defensive AI is not as good. It's reverted back to Madden of the last few years, where defensive players will magically, you know, turn around at the last second to pick off a ball, or will just, you know, warp a few feet away to pick, to intercept a ball. It's just, it's really strange. Like, the current gen, or last gen, Earl, version is a superior game right now, which is a little concerning. Battlefield 4 has had very well-publicized issues, and I've experienced all of them. I mean, the game crashes. I lost my single-player save data. Conquest mode, which is the 64-player mode, was completely unavailable until this past weekend. There's frequent server disconnects. I lose about 20% of the XP I earn from every match after the match. Like, it's just been a mess, technically. It's one of those things where, you know, you understand when publishers push out games, you know, they want to hit their street dates, hit their marketing dates, all that, you know, make it in time for launch. But this product should not have been released in its state, like, just flat out. It's the worst, it's working level, it's the worst game I've seen since maybe ever, but, you know, that I can remember. Like, it's awful. The game itself is very impressive, like, what I have been able to play. The single player is gorgeous. Again, the AI is not the best in the campaign, and the story is not the best, but everything looks great. And honestly, for a launch game, that's the most important thing I wanted. You know, flex the power of the system. Show me what it's capable of. And like Killzone, it gets that aspect right when it's working. And what I have gone to play of the multiplayer has been really fun. Traditionally, I've been more of a Call of Duty kind of arcade shooter guy as opposed to Battlefield. But I've been playing with a bunch of my coworkers and, you know, getting a whole squad filled up. And it's been a blast. But again, so many technical issues. Like, it's just unbelievable. Need for Speed has been pretty good. It's just lacking something that makes it special. You know, I was looking really forward to it because Criterion's Hot Pursuit is my favorite racing game of all time. I really dig the cops versus racers aspect. I really dig, and this game is called Pursuit Tech, but it's all the upgrades you can have that are essentially like weapons or power-ups that you can use to attack the other cars. And that was something that I felt was missing from Most Wanted, that Hot Pursuit had, that kind of held Most Wanted back. And Rivals is basically Most Wanted and Hot Pursuit kind of smashed together without a lot of cohesion. Like, it has a cops versus racers, obviously, is the main theme. It has an open world. But it's designed really weirdly. Like, you get these speed lists, and this is the way you progress and level up, like, as a racer or a cop. And they're basically objectives. So, like, get a silver in any event, or get a silver in a time trial, you know, wreck 3 cop cars, hit 150 miles per hour, for example. And every time, for every level, there's like 3 speed lists you can choose from. You know, one that's tailored more toward, or for a racer at least, one that's tailored more towards racing, one that's tailored more towards the cops versus racers aspect, so it's like Hot Pursuit events and stuff like that. One that's tailored more to just driving accomplishments, like drift 1,000 yards or get 6 seconds of airtime and stuff. So in that sense, it's really flexible in terms of how you're able to play it. The problem is, so you get the speed list, you know, you pick your car, you pick your upgrades, you drop into the world, and then at first it's really disorienting, like what you're actually supposed to do in this game. Like, obviously you have your objectives and you can just play those out that way, but then there's also all these other events in the world that you can do just at a whim, but it's confusing whether there's any like real incentive to any cop you see if you're a racer, or any racer you see if you're a cop. You can initiate event just in the middle of the world, and And if you're a racer, you can also initiate a race, a one-on-one race at any time. And the interesting thing it does is, if you're online when you boot the game, you drop into a world. Your map is already populated with like six other players. They're usually a mix of cops and racers. So you can just, you know, you're doing your events or whatever, you just drive by them. Or, you know, for example, if you're a racer and you're just speeding through the world and another player is a cop, just like an AI, they can start a chase right there. Or you slam into them on accident, you know, whatever. So it's kind of this cool integration, this mishmash of multiplayer and single player. But what I don't understand is it's peer-to-peer matchmaking, so there's a host. So when the host drops out, everyone's game stops while it migrates, even if you're not playing with them, because you're all inhabiting the same map. So if you're in the middle of race, all of a sudden, the host drops out, migrating hosts, and that part is old school. Yeah. There should be servers for this game, and the server should support hundreds of players. That would be awesome. I'm sure they're thinking about that for future installments, but it's just weird. Yeah, it's this weird thing. Like, the idea is great. Implementation is not so much, especially since it's about six players per map, and they can be anywhere in the game's map. So, you know, I'll see them driving around when I'm picking where to start out, but like, and I'll drive by them occasionally, but I feel like there's not as much interaction as there should be or could be. So it's really fun, but it's just, like I said, just lacking something that makes it special the way that a Hot Pursuit did, to me. But if you didn't play Hot Pursuit or Most Wanted, then definitely recommend checking this out. As far as graphics, it's kind of like Madden in that it looks really good. Like, it looks better than a last-gen game, but it doesn't pack the punch of, like, Forza, for example. Or from what I've seen from videos of Forza, at least. Like, where it's, like, definitively next-gen. It's more like they have their own version of particle effects. So there's constantly rain and wind and leaves flying around and stuff like that. But, yeah. So that's been my next-gen experience. Current-gen experience.
It's PS4 experience.
PS4, yeah.
There we go. That's a name for it, too. Daniel, do you want to talk about anything? Or what do you want to talk about first?
Ooh, I guess...
Just not Pokemon.
I guess I should go in chronological order. That'd be the most sense. So, I mean, GTA 5, who hasn't played it?
I haven't.
You haven't played it? Okay, nope. Well, that's interesting. So,
I'm getting it. I'll be playing it soon, because Gamefly just sent it to me. But
have either of you played GTA 4?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Imagine GTA 4 if it was actually fun to play and the world was actually interesting to go about in, and if you you could actually like the main character, and yeah, because I before GTA 5 came out, I went back to play 4 and I was like, this game is not very good. Like,
that's
the controls
else,
are really.
One of my friends said that.
You know, the controls seem like they take forever to register, and the animations are too long, and the cars drive like tanks, and everything is fixed for GTA 5. I mean, literally everything. The guns are really smooth. They're exactly how they are in Max Payne, pretty much, the third one. The cars, they're very responsive, especially the sports and muscle cars. And there's a huge variety of cars in the game. You can even drive a dump truck, which fills up half a highway, which is fantastic. I managed to get away from the police in a dump truck that maxed out at like 20 miles an hour. It was great. The shooting is much better. You can hold multiple weapons for each type, and there's a cool wheel that you get that you can select your weapon from. The characters are interesting, except for Franklin. Franklin just seems to be a very throwaway character, and at the start and at the end they tried to flesh him out, but he still didn't end up being an interesting character at all, which is a shame. But Michael, he's a family guy who used to rob banks, but he doesn't do that anymore. He gets pulled back into his old kind of way of things through not through choice. And Trevor, who is, he is a complete psychopath, and he is so cool because of it. Because, so obviously one of the major features is the ability to swap between any of the characters at any time, and it works. It works kind of well. It can be a bit slow to load. Not too slow, but slower than I would like. And sometimes they put limits on it. So sometimes in missions, if you're on a mission and it's just Michael and Trevor, you can't play as Franklin. And if it's a mission with all of them, you can swap between them at any point in time. And or if Trevor's gone and done something and he's sort of away for a bit, you can't pick Trevor while you're just mulling about in the overworld. So it works when it needs to. It's very interesting because sometimes you can, if you're playing as Michael, for example, you can actually, if you're just doing something in the world, you can meet Franklin and they talk to each other and they're like, do you want to go out for a drink? And you can go out for a drink with Franklin. It's really cool. Yeah, and like you can even make them meet by moving Franklin to a specific area, swapping to Michael and then moving Michael to that area, if you so want. It's really cool. The missions are, another problem I have with GTA 4 is it takes so long to get into it. And GTA 5 throws you right into it. Like, there's action right off the beat, and the missions are never boring. They're always exciting. There are some missions where the game just, like, throws you in a really weird situation. It's like, wait, I actually have to do this? And yet you have to pull it off, and it goes wrong, and like there's one point where you get attacked by the Air Force and while you're in a jumbo jet and you think, oh shit, I'm in a jumbo jet and I'm going to about to get shot down. It's really cool. It's my favorite GTA, even better than all the rest of them. They fixed everything in 4. I love it. You're not going to be disappointed. You probably won't like it because you don't like Rockstar games, so I can't really say anything that would convince you.
I'm going to buy it. I have to buy it because it's one of those I promised my friends, and we all get three games together. So I'm looking for it for Black Friday. That and Last of Us,
it's the
so
most,
some other people can leave me alone.
It's the most refined Rockstar game that's ever been released, so maybe you might like it. I don't know. I haven't played GTA Online because I'm not paying for Xbox Live. And apparently it's been up and down and whatever for the last few weeks. So, whatever, I don't care about GTA Online. After that, it was probably... it would have been Pokemon, and everybody knows
yeah.
about Pokemon. It's,
you play X or Y?
I have X. From what I can tell, the differences are very minimal. Like, even less
yeah.
than most other games. It's the best one. It's the best one as far as I'm concerned. There's a few stuff that I miss, and there are only little things that only I care about, so they're not really things worth mentioning.
I'm kind of curious to hear them now.
Well, there's like in Black and White, there was in most other games, there's a ton of sort of places to visit after the story ends. Whereas in X and Y, there's one town.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard the post-game content in a second. But granted, I'm near the story gym now, so I'm taking my time with this.
Yeah. There's one town
in
X and Y.
The Pokemon level up a lot faster. Was that just me?
They do. That's mainly because the changes to the EXP share.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and also get an XP for capturing Pokemon.
Well,
so,
yeah,
I'm so glad they put that in because
finally.
Capturing Pokemon is harder than killing them.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah, so it's no longer a struggle between I need to level up this Pokemon, but I need to catch this one as well.
Something I also have noticed is it seems to be easier to catch Pokemon in general. Maybe because I've changed my approach to catching Pokemon, but nowadays, what I do is because money, you can get money really easy, I just throw Pokeballs at Pokemon. I don't even bother to weaken it unless it's a legendary, and it works after like the fourth or fifth Pokeball. Huh. And I've got 929 in my bag, so I'm just going to keep doing that with every Pokemon I come across. It's my favorite I wouldn't say it's my favorite one, but it's the best one. I imagine.
Yeah, I like the look of it a lot too.
Yeah, there are some Pokemon that look kind of weird, but they're in the minority, the vast minority. There's very few of them that look kind of weird, but most of them are really cool.
And it's really cool that they're animated in the battles instead of just sprites, you know? Like, that is awesome. And it looks great in 3D, but it's weird that the rest of the game, like when you're in the world, is not in 3D.
Well, actually, it's not weird because the frame rate, I don't know if, whether you
have... Oh, yeah, the frame rate does suffer.
The frame rate is horrible in 3D, and it's like, oh, dear.
I was constantly switching it on and off because I love the way it looks, but then I would reach a point where I got sick of the frame rate hit and I would turn it off for a while, and then I would keep going back and forth.
Yeah, the other thing I worry of is the fact that almost all the Pokemon get unique animations for even the same moves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is really neat. There was one, I can't remember what it was called, but it's really awesome. Like, the Pokemon runs through like shadows and you just see them in the windows. I don't remember what the move was called, though. Somebody did it to me. I was like, this is awesome, even though it was kicking my ass.
Although there are a couple of moves also that have really bad animations, like Woodhammer, for example. Your Pokemon's 3D model just sort of rotates 90 degrees clockwise, and then it rotates back again. And that's it. It's like, what? Who thought this looked good? I don't understand. So there's some sort of visual quirks that are kind of odd. But for the most part, it looks pretty good. And it's actually been the first Pokemon game where I've actually been compelled to catch them all. Like, most of the time, it's like, oh, I've got a good team.
Good luck. What are there, 700 plus now?
Yeah, yeah, but there's not actually... if you have... I bought Black 2 just so I could complete the Pokedex in X. That's how ridiculous it is.
From Black and White to this?
Not yet. Eventually, there's going to be two apps that they'll put on the eShop for free. One of them's called Pokemon Bank, which is the pay a very small amount subscription fee, and you can store Pokemon in the cloud.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
There's PokeTransfer, and the way that works is, I assume you put your cartridge in, your Black, White, Black 2 or White 2 cartridge in, and then it copies the Pokemon off of them, or it might actually take them off of the cartridge and put them on to your X or Y save. But they're coming, as far as I'm aware, they're coming Boxing Day this year, so you gotta wait for that.
Day after Christmas, right? Or
yeah.
The other thing I like about the Pokemon stuff is like they throw a lot of Pokemon at you really quickly and really often. Like, I think, like I said, I'm at the third gym and I've already have something like 100 Pokemon in my collection. I was surprised. Like, one of the first things you can catch is the Pikachu, who has kind of become the mascot for the franchise.
I was so sad. I missed it. I didn't run into Pikachu on my playthrough.
Really? Because Pikachu pops up everywhere in that first town.
That's what I understand. I blasted through the game when I played. Like, I was really just like, I'm going to level them all up and then get through each gym. And then, I wasn't focused on catching many, so I just happened to not run into one when I was in that area, somehow.
The only problem I have with Pikachu is, it's obviously fan-baiting. It's obviously fan-baiting by using the voice actor for Pikachu in the anime as Pikachu's cry in the game.
Does it say Pikachu?
Yeah, it actually says Pikachu when you send it out and it dies. And it's just like, it kind of ruins the consistency because everyone's...
Because he's 31.
Yeah, everything else has bleeps and bloops. And if you were to go by the Pokemon Origins series, the sort of game universe, they don't actually say their own names. So that's kind of weird that Pikachu does and the other Pokemon don't, I don't know. So that's kind of weird. The variety.
I like how you can move really fast in this one too.
Yeah. The one thing that always gets me is you can walk only in 8 directions, but you can use the bike or the roller skates in any direction you want using the circle pad. And there are times where you can walk with the circle pad. It's like, why only 8 directions?
Yeah.
Like, okay, only 8 directions if you're using the D-pad, but not when you're using the circle pad. That's what it's there for.
yeah, the controls for movement is really weird. Not just the fact that analog stick is your roller blades and D-pad is walking, but also because, like, most of the time if you're indoors, they take away your roller skates anyhow.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because, like, I want to use the circle pad the entire time, but I hate, like, the roller blade is nice to get somewhere, but it's really a pain in the ass to try to talk to somebody or do anything with it.
Yeah.
Because like, a character just seems to zip right past anything you want to do.
I found myself not using the bike very much in this game.
I don't really see the reason to.
Yeah, with the rollerblades, I mean, it serves the purpose that the bike used to, which was to move around. And you also have the option to run if you're walking.
Yeah, I don't use the bike either. It's very strange. But yeah, I'm an idiot and I erased my Black 1 save, so I went and completed Black 1 again, and Black 1 is my least favourite of the lot, just so I could get those Pokemon over. And I bought Black 2 just so I could get the Pokemon in that. I've got a ton of trading from Pearl to Black to do. It's going to be a long quest to get all of the Pokemon, but I'm actually going to do it this time.
Somebody has an addiction.
Yeah, slightly.
This game encourages addiction.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the motto of the franchise is gotta catch them all.
Yeah.
Daniel's where you're going to do it.
And then, so 2 weeks after Pokemon came out, Ace Attorney 5 came out. And I was... You won't believe how excited I was for this game. And you won't believe how much I was excited to find out that the game delivered all the hype. It's so good.
That was the reason you bought your 3DS, right?
Yeah, it was the reason I bought my 3DS, and I'm so glad it wasn't, like, didn't turn out to be another Mega Man Legends 3, because, bloody hell. Although, actually, Pokemon would have softened that blow, I guess. Afterwards, I bought all the DS versions, because I never, unfortunately, I didn't pay for the DS versions originally. I obtained them through other means. So, I'm atoning for that now. Ace Attorney 5 is not all that different from the previous ones, but the art style is so much better. Like, the 3D makes it. The 3D, I think, in the 3DS was designed for Ace Attorney because, like, the characters really, you get a really, really good sense of depth between the characters and their backgrounds. And they do some cool effects, like, when you start a court, a trial, it sort of pans through the door, and it says, like, all rise on the screen, and it really pops, and when there's a bit of drama going down, and it pans around the courtroom, everything looks really cool, and the 3D environments, when you're actually investigating, that's really cool as well, and the story is also cool, and, although... The one thing I will say is Capcom's localization team is very sloppy. There's a lot of spelling mistakes. And there's a lot in the Ace Attorney games anyway, but there's far more in Ace Attorney 5 than there are the other ones. Other than that, I haven't been playing a whole lot. I'm still playing Pokemon. I'm playing Black 2 as I speak. There was a couple of games I bought on PC. I can't even remember. I bought Payday 2 when it was on sale, and that game is what the first game should have been from the start. Because if
I
you
still
ask
didn't
me,
really dig it that much.
I
was playing
it
on 360.
I want to get it on 360. That's the one. I'm waiting for it to be cheaper. I'm hoping Microsoft has a final 360 sale for Christmas because I have like $40 after my account.
What didn't you like about it?
I don't know, it just... I was having trouble putting my finger on it. I was trying to explain to my friend, because I rented it because my friend bought it and was super into it and just kept telling me I had to play it. And I don't know, it was definitely much improved over the first Payday, but I guess just the whole concept of the game doesn't appeal to me that much, like doing the heists and stuff. I just didn't find it that fun or engaging, personally. But
I like it because the shooting is very cathartic in it. It's not too heavy, it's not too light, it's just right. And, you know, as long as there's somebody in the game telling me what to do, I don't mind because I'll just go and do it, you know. All I want to do really is shoot at people and steal things and, you know, make money. And actually, I think the best decision they made with that game, as well as a very good decision they made in GTA 5, actually. In GTA 5, when you do heists, there's a box in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen that tells you how much you've stolen. And whoever came up with that is a genius, because, like, there's one mission where you have money ticking away constantly, and it's like, oh, shit, I've got to hurry, because this money is going to go if I don't. And there is one heist where you steal a huge amount of cash, and if you're not careful, you can lose half of it in one go. And seeing, like, there's like a helicopter carrying half of the money. And if you see the helicopter explode because you didn't protect it well enough, and you see it fall from the sky, and you think, no, 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 no. And then the money just tickles down, keeps going all the way down, and it's like, oh, crap. I just lost all of that money. And Payday has the opposite, where as you play the game, you keep visiting your safe house, and there's this table, and all of the money you've stolen is stacked up on the table. And every time you see it, it's just that little bit bigger, but you notice it, and you see it get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's so satisfying to see that pile of cash just get bigger every single time you visit it. I don't know, it's just a static thing that doesn't, like, but it's just so good to see it every time.
Yeah, every time I hear someone talk about this game, I think, like, it sounds super fun. But I don't know, I just didn't enjoy it that much when I played. But
are you playing on your own, or are you playing with friends?
I had a little bit of a mix. Oh, you're asking Daniel, sorry.
I guess I was asking both of you.
I just find a server, so long as it's not on a hard difficulty, because I don't find it that fun on hard. You know, as long as there's a server with people in it, I play on it. I play it. And I just do what they tell me to do and shoot people.
Okay. Anything else?
Maybe it's worth mentioning Bioshock Infinite Burial at Sea.
I want to hear about this.
So, obviously it's a pop.
It fixes all the Infinite stuff.
Well, kind of. It's a part one of a two-part thing, and it shows. You're probably best waiting for the second part to come out, and then buying the season pass, because Burial at Sea episode one on its own is overpriced. It's as simple as that. It's very short, and I'm talking, if you stretch it, it's 2 hours. And it's $11.99 on Steam right now. It's probably similarly priced depending on where you are and what platform you're on. But it's a two-hour experience for
$11 in the US.
For £12, $15, right? And the season pass is £16 or $20. So you're going to get much more value out of the season pass, and I would wait until episode 2 to play it, because it kind of stops short. Otherwise, it's very atmospheric. It has the same kind of world problems that Infinite has, where it's kind of a look but don't touch thing. It tries to explain Rapture, and it's like, we know about Rapture, though. There's no secrets that Rapture has left. I don't know why you're continuing to do this, but okay. They fixed the two guns thing in a very curious way. Aliens Colonial Marines had this, where you could carry two guns at a time, but you could swap any one of those guns out for any other gun that you collected at some point, as long as you have ammo for it. And the game, Aliens Colonial Marines, never tells you this is possible. I found out by accident. Bioshock Infinite does the same thing. You can carry two guns at a time, and you can, like, if I have a pistol and a shotgun, and I've got the shotgun out, and there's a Tommy gun on the floor, if I pick up the Tommy gun, it puts the shotgun into sort of the stash, and then I can swap between the Tommy gun and the pistol at any time. But you have to press and hold a button to bring up the wheel, and the wheel will swap a weapon out for you. And they never tell you about the wheel. So I was like, oh, I've got no ammo. Where's all the ammo gone? And I didn't know that there was this wheel until I accidentally held down the button to swap weapon. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I don't need ammo. So it was a kind of a hacky solution. But overall, the game is it's well written. Courtney Draper does this. Her performance is really good. She's not kind of... She's kind of a more learned, tougher Elizabeth than she is in the base game. And it really shows, and it's really cool to see the sort of Raptor take on BioShock Infinite, I guess, because it's not completely like BioShock 1. I can't really describe it very well without spoiling it for anyone, but it looks very nice. There's a lot of atmosphere to Rapture. It's nice seeing Rapture pre-Civil War. Although it's not surprising to see Rapture how it is in Burial at Sea, but my ultimate recommendation is to just wait for the either buy the season pass now or buy it later. It doesn't matter. Just get the season pass because you get better value out of it, especially if episode 2.
Well, it's cheaper than buying the two episodes.
Yeah, well, if episode 2 is priced the same as episode 1, then yeah, it'll be cheaper. Yeah. So that's the best way of doing it. Just ignore Clash and the Clouds because that sucks. Wait until episode 2 before you play it, because it kind of just stops after a little bit, and it's like, oh, okay, I'll have to wait then.
Okay.
And if anything, I think episode 2 is going to be more interesting, because apparently there's no combat in it, so that'll be interesting.
I'm curious to hear how that goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah, episode 2 is the one where you're playing as Elizabeth, right?
Yeah.
Is it intended to actually fit in either Infinite or Bioshock 1's story, or is it its own kind of thing?
It fits more into Infinite than Bioshock 1's.
How does that work with, like, is it just supposed to be, like, an alternate...
Well, it explains it.
Timeline, or...
I can't explain it without spoiling it.
Oh, it does? Okay. Alright, fair enough.
Anything else?
Not that I can recall.
Okay, my turn, and I didn't realize we were gonna go. I didn't realize we had so many games to talk about.
This is a month of build-ups.
I know. I don't know if I talked about the Wonderful 101 on the show yet. I've played that. That was a ton of fun. It takes some getting used to.
You just mentioned that it's your favorite Wii U game.
It was my favorite Wii U game. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, it's a very creative, very off the wall. I mean, if you've played a Platinum games, you kind of get the sense of humor, you get the sense of scale, and it just ramps up the craziness. Like, it has boss battles at the start of the game and set pieces at the start of the games that some games would do for their finale or their DLC and stuff like that. And it somehow it just gets more and more crazy. I mean, I guess the best way to describe it would be it's a Saturday morning cartoon on steroids. It's Power Rangers if it had the budget. And I don't mean that just because they, you know, transform into superheroes and stuff like that. They actually pretty much transform at the start of the game, and that's pretty much them throughout the course of the game. But there's just so much to it. It takes you to a vast amount of environments. You get a ton of bosses, a ton of different power-ups and weapons. Like, even the ones they showed in the trailer, like, they had that big 10-minute trailer. And you would think that's that, but most of that was, like, the first maybe half of the game. And there's so much more in the back half of the game. Even the final boss, like, the final chapter is about an hour and a half long. And it sounds long and tedious, but it isn't. It just gets bigger and bigger and more insane. And by the time you're done, your mouth is on the floor at the level of insanity that this game has on the screen. And it's backed up by a really solid combat system that I think... It's really hard to kind of wrap your head around if you're not used to playing on the Wii U. Like, you can play it with the analog stick, but in my experience, I haven't found the analog stick to be that enjoyable to draw most of the shapes. Like, some of them are fine, like a gun, it's, you know, straight up and across, that's easy enough to do. A fist is a giant circle, that's easy enough to do. The sword is the easiest one to do, and that's usually the one you pull out most often, because it's just a straight line in any direction. But there are certain ones, and especially in the back half of the game, this is where it kind of gets really tedious with the analog stick. There are certain ones that you need a delay in your drawing. So, like, there's a I don't know. I don't know if you call it a, it's not a boomerang. There is a boomerang in this game, but it's something else. And basically, in order to draw, you have to draw a straight line. Halfway through the straight line, you have to pause and then continue drawing it. And yeah, that is really hard to kind of do on the analog stick. But you know, like so much creativity, so much fun, a great combat system that's very unique. And it's I've never felt overwhelmed by the amount of stuff going on the screen, even though it is easy to kind of lose track of your heroes and lose track of, you know, like, because you are controlling a team of 100, but, you know, you have to focus on one person, really, and how many people are with you so that you can do bigger and better attacks. And the game does kind of give you shortcuts by allowing you to unlock, I guess, certain equipment for your team that will help with certain stuff. Like, you can draw a shape or a figure, and you get a special add-on that allows you to supercharge it instead of having to stand there and draw like a super boomerang, stuff like that. But yes, it makes a great use of the Wii U controller as far as like drawing different shapes and getting those out. It's also a very lovely game, great sense of humor, like I said before. And that's really my biggest takeaway, is just the size and scope of the game, its sense of humor and storytelling, and its core combat is just phenomenal. I checked that Pokemon, but we've already talked about that. I'm playing X and not that far into it. And Batman Arkham Origins. Have either of you tried this?
Not yet.
Well, I have a review up on the site, so you can read it there. But we've kind of had this discussion before with the Games of the Generation stuff, where Asylum is just a much more compact game, and it works in favor of that. This game is about the same size as Arkham City, so it does suffer that same problem where there's a lot to do. I do think they integrate some of the challenges better, like the Ridges stuff is better integrated. But my big problem with this game, as far as like an open world goes, is that it has like this one bridge that you have to cross over back and forth several times throughout the game. And it's not really that enjoyable because it's just a straight shot for about a minute and a half. Like, usually there's some enemies and stuff you can find there, but there's really nothing else to do. And there's really no other way to get across these two islands without going across this bridge half a dozen times throughout the course of the game. Eventually, you do open up quick travel, and that helps out a bit, but quick travel is so-so because this game does load a lot and it loads long. It has a lot of technical issues, but the core combat, the core basis of it, still works out well. I think they do a decent job of incorporating a lot of the villains they introduce into the game. But at the same time, I think the concept they sold this on, which is like Batman taking on a bunch of assassins over the course of a night, was a lot more interesting than we got before, than when we got in the final game. Without spoiling too much, because they do kind of give this away in the pre-launch stuff, is like the main bad guy ends up being the Joker again.
Ugh.
And yeah, that's kind of, I like to joke about it. That's kind of how I felt too, because like they advertise it, like it's going to be Batman versus Deathstroke. It's going to be Batman versus Copperhead and Fire.
Oh, you mean like how City was advertised as Batman versus Hugo Strange, but then
it turned out to be Batman versus, yes, that's the exact same thing, and that's exactly how I felt. I'm like, this isn't a new twist. This is really the twist you've given us for every game in this franchise so far, is that the big bad is the Joker. Which doesn't work that well a third time.
And it's not Mark Hamill.
No, he does his best Mark Hamill impersonation, though.
Who is?
Which is
Troy Baker the Joker, or is he Batman?
Yep, it's Troy Baker, the Joker.
And then Roger Craig Smith is Batman.
Oh, that's and right. That's you.
Yes, and half the time he sounds like a marriage between Christian Bale and Kevin Conroy's Batman. And sometimes he sounds like his own unique thing. Now, with the name Batman Arkham Origins, it's kind of, you know, it's interesting to note that it's not an origin tale of Batman. It's not an origin tale of Arkham Asylum. I guess the closest thing would be it's an origin of the first time Batman met Joker, and that's about it. What else is there? I don't know, Wii U, so I haven't tried the multiplayer at all. From what I've heard, it's not really anything special, which is why I decided to go with the cheaper version. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Like, I wrote, like, this is a month ago, I wrote up most of my thoughts in the review. It's a fine game. I would recommend it maybe if it's, you know, maybe $30-$40.
How buggy did you find it? And did you try the multiplayer?
It didn't have the multiplayer in the Wii U version.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's a blessing.
Yeah. And as for bugginess, it was... I didn't find that it was any more or less buggy than Arkham Assault, Arkham City, I should say. And I just feel like that engine or that design wasn't made for this open world game that they're pushing it for. And as they're good games, I do feel like it's just trying to stretch it because they get out of it, it's just a lot of building and pop-ins and stuff like that. And then usually what happens, I had three major bugs. One almost gave me a heart attack because I was entering the climax of the game and it got stuck on a story point that it wouldn't let me progress beyond.
Oh.
Or Batman. Because what happened was there's a part in the game where you have to, basically you have to use the remote control Batarang to activate a switch by shooting it through electricity and then hitting the switch. I did that. The game didn't count it, and I couldn't make progress, so I started, I reset the game, I'm like, okay, I'll just do it. But what happened was it saved it after I'd done it, so Batman kept on telling me to do what I have already done, and I couldn't do it because the panel was already smashed up from when I used the remote, the Batarang beforehand. So he keeps on repeating, maybe if I do it, I'm like, I've done it, and there's no way to do it now. So eventually what I did is I just looked on YouTube, and I found exactly what you had to do, and I just tried it. And for some reason, the game allowed me to cheat through that, even though even after I got past that point, Batman was still giving me the suggestion to do the task I already accomplished. And I mentioned this in the review, and I'll mention this here. This game, this franchise, really needs to either stop doing boss battles or find a way to actually do them well. They cannot do boss battles at all.
I think there's been a few good ones.
Mr. Freeze is the one that stands out.
Yeah, that comes to mind.
I think the Ra's al Ghul fight from the second one.
You know, I thought the... I'm not a fan of boss battles anyway, but the Killer Croc fight was pretty cool in the first one.
I thought the Killer Croc one was the one where you had to use the explosive stuff to trap him. Or am I thinking of a different fight?
It wasn't that.
No, is that the one was the one. It was in the sewers.
Yeah.
It was like a pure combat one, and it actually... Like, it's kind of a test of whether you actually knew how to use the combat system or not, and it was really cool.
The problem I find is I don't think that the combat system is really made for one-on-one combat, and that tends to be what they do for these boss battles. The reason the Mr. Freeze one works, and they try to replicate this a bit in this game, especially with the final boss, is that Mr. Freeze forces you to use everything at your disposal and become creative with your environment.
Yeah.
Instead of focusing on the core combat, where a lot of them are just like, Batman's going to punch you to death. There's one cool one in here. I won't ruin what it is, but, some of them are decent, but this one is just, it fits the character of Batman and fits the enemy he's encountering.
Which enemy?
The Executioner.
I don't even know who that is.
And you'll figure it out during the course of the game why it fits his character when you get that boss battle against him. Then there's not so fun ones like Copperhead, Parchy, because Batman's poison, so you see multiple of her. And it's just like multiple characters, and she has one of those attacks. Well, she has two of those attacks, I think. She has one attack which is unblockable, so you're just kind of dodging in a circle until she finishes it. And the other one is like one of those multi-dodge ones where you have to dodge like three or four times in a row before you can trigger a counterattack. So yeah. And the final boss battle again comes off as weak. I won't spoil too much, but I don't think it's going to surprise anybody. It deals with Venom, which is another part of the game that carries over and everything. Is that Venom formula seems to pop up everywhere. So yeah, Batman. This doesn't sound like a glowing review, but it's actually a really fun game. If you like Asylum and City, it's just more of the same, which isn't a bad thing at all. And more recently, or I should say right before we started recording this, Super Mario 3D World. So, I mean, I'm going to start off with the thing I've been loving about this game the most, and I have a lot of things about this game, but the music is phenomenal in this game.
Yeah, it really is. I was watching a live stream yesterday, and I was just like, oh my god, like this is compressed to shit music, but I love it.
Yes. The main theme is like that kind of infectious smart, you know, music. The dun 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 dun. Yeah, you get that, and that's fine. But that's not even the best song in the game. I mean, even like in the first world, I think 1-5, which is the circus theme stage, and we'll get to that in a bit. Phenomenal music. The Ghost House, fantastic music. There's two jingles that they use when you complete a world and save the fairy princess, because it's not Princess Peach who's kidnapped this time. And when you start a new world, you kind of have like, this is the main threat music, and they're both fantastic little jingles that adds maybe 10 or 15 seconds, but great music. And I still haven't even come across my favorite music from the Troyas, which is that very jazz-influenced theme song. Great, great, great music. Aside from that, and this is kind of, you know, we had the same discussion with Galaxy, it's just the variety on display in this game. Like I said before, like, it has the general Mario themes. I'm through the first three worlds right now. Oh, I'm actually on the final boss of the third world. But I've gone through most of that, and the first world is just kind of the Plains world. But within that Plains world, you get the circus stage, which I mentioned. You get the Bowser Castle, which is kind of above an ocean, because I guess he finally upgraded from the Aqua Pools. Great, great upgrade, I would say. The second world is a desert theme, but you also get a, you get that, I don't know if you've seen the Shadow Alley play, which is the one which uses the light sources and Mario's on the backdrop. That's really neat. That's a great visual trick. The third one's an ice theme, and even within that, I've gotten, and this is a minor spoiler to some people, even though Nintendo showed it, there's a Mario Kart stage in this game. That's in the third world. Great stage.
I need to look that up.
It has the music from the original Super Mario Kart. It's pretty much just a dash stage, but, you know, you do have to do some platforming, especially if you want to get the green stars and stamps, which I'll get to in a second. There's a autumn stage. There is a chain-link stage, which is a pain in the ass. There's a boss battle aboard a high-speed train, which is where I'm at
now. Is that
now.
The gold train?
No, this is an actual... The gold train, I guess, comes later on, but this is an actual train, and it's kind of like the airships in Super Mario Bros. 3, but it's really neat, because at the start of the stage, you know, like in Mario 3, you always kind of... You run onto the little cannon, and it would shoot you up to the ship. Here, you actually have to get on board the train, and what happens is the train is moving really fast, so you have to, like, dash, but there's also stuff you can get on the ground if you're fast enough. So it's kind of a combination of what do I need, what can I get before the time runs out. I didn't realize that the first time I was in. I just had Peach running alongside the train until I ran out of hand and it was game over because the train outran her. There was the second boss is, what was this? Oh, this was the army stage. This is kind of like, again, going back to Super Mario Bros. 3, like they had like those tank stages where it was divided into multiple parts and you had to get through them and shot like the cannons and stuff like that. Ton of new enemies in this game, which I was really surprised about because Mario already has a huge stable of enemies. My favorites so far are, you've probably seen them in the trailers. They're like the little the little army. They stand in rank and file until you kill one of them and then they all start to scramble. And then once they scramble, they come back, and then they just kind of start making a beeline for your main character. And I say main character because you can pick from any of the four characters at any time. And I find myself using Luigi and Peach a lot more than any of the other two. And just because I haven't found a reason to use Toad yet, and Mario is kind of the all-around guy, and I play enough game with him. I just love the fact that I can go through the game with Luigi or Peach as I deem necessary. And speaking of going as the game is Peach, it's really sad for somebody who's been in the franchise for 30 years, almost 30 years now. Like, I'm getting excited seeing her in her fire costume for the first time. I just got Tanuki Peach for the first time. I was super excited for that. Lots of cool stuff like that. And then there's the new power-ups. You've already seen the cat suit, which adds a whole new element to the game, because it just kind of forces you to check everywhere, climbing up and down walls and all this other stuff. And while it's cheating, it also allows you to kind of always get the top of the flagpole if you have it at the end of the level, because you can climb up it at the end.
I love the walking animation of the characters when they're in the cat suit on the map. It's so cute. And it's like, oh my god!
Yes, everything in this game oozes cuteness or adorableness or has a charm to it. Like, there's one stage, and honestly, at the end of the day, this has nothing to do with the stage at all once you get through it. There's a stage that starts off with, like, three Goombas reacting at the pool. Like, they're just in, like, the little tubes, and they're just like sleeping on the beach. And they don't do anything to you as you kind of come in contact with them. So I just walk right past them. And then I just kind of dicked around, and they all tried to run after me, but they can't get over the water because they're on these little tubes that got hit on the end. It's just really funny to watch. And again, it's nothing that, it doesn't add to the game in any way, but it's just a nice, cute feature of the title. What else is there? Oh, I love the cat suits, but really, Double Cherries is where it's at. Once you start controlling like five different like five Marios or five Luigi's at once, it just becomes a game of micromanagement, just trying to get them all where you need them.
How do you control that many?
Well, you control one character, and they all mimic you.
Oh, right, okay.
It's like they finally made Mario 128.
Yes, I think that was part of the idea that they reused here. But yeah, so what happens is, like, obviously, in a platform, they're going to get divided up. So what you want to do, depending on what you need them to do, is, like, you can either run along a wall, and this will kind of line them up straight, or you can run, you know, if you're on a gap, you can run in front of that, and this will spread them out if you need it. Because, you know, different challenges would need different things. Like, there's one part of the stage where you need, like, you need one on one side and one on the other side. So you kind of split them up along the wall and then have them jump onto what they need to do. And then, yeah, just trying to keep them all together and stuff like that. It's just fun. And the music helped as well. And what I was pleasantly surprised about, I didn't think I would actually enjoy it, is the Captain Toad minigame, which honestly could be its own standalone game if they want. Not like a full package game, but like a 5-10 eShop release. Basically, it's kind of like a puzzle-oriented thing where he can't jump, so it's basically navigating a 3D space, kind of like they did in 3D Land, and navigating a 3D space with him and trying to figure out how all the levels work and stuff like that. And it's just a really nice diversion, nice little puzzle game that I've only played two of them so far, but I would love to see more of that. Like, I wouldn't mind like $5-$10, I mean, like 100 of those little puzzles to solve. And like I said before, you get the green stars, which is kind of the staple of Mario at this point. Either the green stars or the three coins that they hide in every stage to make it more difficult and unlock data stuff. But the new addition is the stamps. Now, stamps are something you collect, and I don't know. Well, neither one of you have Wii U, so you haven't used Miiverse, and it's not on 3DS yet. But basically what these stamps do are they allow you to post on Miiverse using them. And it's a drawing of the characters in motion or something like that. But it's a nice little touch because you can make like, these little, like people are making like little stories with them just using the stamps in different ways. Like I posted on my Twitter, like the Ninja Peach one where it looks like Peach is catching a piranha pants fireball in her hand just by combining those two things. And it's a very neat thing. I just love the artwork of it, and the artwork they use for the characters in general is fantastic. It's a great use of Miiverse as well. Not only because of that, but when you finish a stage, like you get a bunch of Miiverse posts at the top of the screen.
Yeah,
which
I saw that, and the Miis that roam around the world map, and they just hold up the posts when you pass them. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's a great function of it. It gives you that social aspect without it being in your face or being obnoxious. And it's very helpful. I mean, granted, I hope they cut some of it. I hope they filter out because some of it can be spoilers. Granted, you just beat the stage to defeat the purpose of saying that. But yeah, you'll see people give you tips on how to find their hidden stars or how difficult they found. And it's just really nice. It's like a social feed of people who just kind of went through the same experience as you did and stuff like that. And like you said, the Miis on the main, the overworld. And the overworld's really cool because it's the traditional Mario overworld where you go from stage to stage, but it's free from, so you can just kind of roam around it at your own pace and stuff like that. And there's secrets on that as well. Like I found a hidden one up, I found like a hidden toad house which gives you items. You usually encounter like an enemy type, like a blockade which opens up the second half of the level. It's so well put together. Like, every part seems to be crafted with love in some regards. It's like, we have this simple idea. How can we make it better? Like, some of the stuff, like I said, the Goombas on the beach, I think, exemplifies it. It serves no purpose in the grand scheme of the things for that stage. But it's something in there because it's playing on the history of the characters. And it is nice to see them on vacation and kind of get into stuff. And, you know, it's not as epic or grand or, you know, grandiose as the Galaxy games as people like to talk about, but One of the things I love about it is just the design of the open, like the open space. It's not everything's open, and when it's not open, it has this really cool kind of like diorama style where like it's kind of like you're facing into the world, and like, it's on a side, and it's just so you don't go off the boundaries outside. But it's really neat, and it really kind of hit home during one of the water stages because it's a really cool angle that you don't really often see in video games. Like it's a I guess technically it would be in a 2.5D game in that regard, but it's like you can move back, you know, in and out of the screen and stuff like that. Though it did also remind me one of the things I mentioned this in my review, but 3D was very essential to navigating the 3D space in this game design. Sometimes it's really hard to kind of judge it in this game because you don't have that feedback.
Yeah, because I play 3D Land with the 3D off most of the time just to save battery, and I find that a lot in 3D Land as well.
Yeah, like you know, you think it's a gimmick, but playing 3D World, I'm like, yeah, now we're kind of, I do miss the 3D because it did give you that extra dimension of like, okay, this is where my character is and this is where I need to jump. That, you know, it's not a game-breaking thing. It's never really, you know, it's never really done out too badly, but I do notice that sometimes, like, I have like, I need to adjust the jumps or hidden stuff in my head because I think I'm here when I'm, like, one space behind where I need to be or something like that. So yeah, I mean, I'm only like three worlds in, but right now I just love it so much, and I want to, hopefully during Thanksgiving week I get to take it over to some house and play it with them. I really want to get my teeth into like multiplayer and stuff like that.
Oh, so you haven't tried it yet with multiple people?
Well, I mean, I just got asked,
right.
So and. It was like, I got it after work, and I pretty much, so yeah, I haven't had time to see anybody with it, but no, I haven't played it with multiple people, and I feel like it's going to be better than the new Super Mario Brothers series as far as multiplayer goes, because it's three dimensions, so there's a lot more room instead of bumping into everybody all the time, but I can also see it being just as hectic in certain stages, especially the auto-scrolling ones, because they just never give you enough room in those auto-scrolling stages for four people on a platform.
I wonder if it zooms out at all.
It has in multiplayer, as far as I know, it has a completely fixed camera, and it stretches a bit, and then it's always going to follow the person in the front. So if people fall too far behind, it's going to do the same thing it does in New Super Mario Brothers, and it's either going to bubble them or bring them forward.
Gotcha.
Because it also has a thing like in 3D Land where the stages are sometimes divided by, like, those little blocks that transport you to another area, or those pipes. Which reminds me, I remember, you know, a lot of people were down on this when it was announced, and it wasn't the best thing to highlight as your reveal, but the clear pipes, cool idea, they really work well in this game. Interesting level designs around them. Always pisses me off when I miss a turn. It's basically, it's a normal pipe, but basically usually what happens is you have alternate routes and stuff like that. So it's just like, fine, you know, like just trying to, sometimes you're being chased by enemies, sometimes you can kind of use it as a weapon, like you can shoot a fireball through it and hit enemies across the stage where it comes out and stuff like that. Huh. But basically it's a green pipe, but you can see where you're going. So what they tend to do is they tend to hide stuff on different levels for you to kind of like navigate through. It's like a mini puzzle. Or whatever, really fun. Lots of hidden content. It's so far it just feels like a love letter to the franchise. I mentioned the Mario Kart stage. There's, you know, like this homages to Mario Brothers 2 with the four characters, of course, but the music. Like there's certain hidden parts where you hear like the Mario 2 South Machine music. You know, like there's Mario Brothers 3 music. Like I said, the train reminds me of the airships of Mario Brothers 3. The bosses, like the Boom Boom from Super Mario Brothers 3D Land returns as a boss. The Karibo Boot from Super Mario Brothers 3 is in here, but this time it's an ice skate. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. And you know, like it's just so much to do, so much variety on this day, and that music is so good.
Does it use the gamepad for anything significant?
Yes, well, significant, no. It does use it for something. So there's certain stages where you need it. Like, it's minor stuff, but there's certain stages that like, you need to pull out certain parts of the level and stuff like that, or throw into the mic.
I know that there are some levels where you get I mean, this isn't necessary. It's a nice little thing. You get really small Goombas, and they are tiny. And if you blow on the microphone, it blows them away in the game. And that's
yes,
great.
Oh, that's cool.
Again, a minor thing that they didn't need to add, but yes. I find it adorable, but I also find it... the first time I encountered it, it was an accident, because it was one of the stages that used the gamepad, and I was just throwing to kind of move a platform, and I saw them, and they were moving back, so I threw it again, and they fell off the stage. I'm like, God, that sucks. Whatever, I don't... Jumping on the tiny ones are a pain in the ass, because, like I said, sometimes it's hard to judge the 3D, the space, and the tiny ones have a much smaller hitbox, of course, so... Yeah, getting rid of them that way is easy and fun. Another little thing that's adorable but also sad is when you steal a Koopa's shell, he will chase after you. But if you get too far away or if you throw his shell away, like you can throw it off the stage, he'll get depressed and he'll sigh and he'll turn around. And I'm just like, aw, that's so sad, but it's such a great little thing that they added to the game. For what reason, who knows, but it's charming. It's adorable. So yes, I am probably going to, it goes without saying, it's a fantastic looking game as well. Probably one of the best easily the best second Wii U game to date, and probably one of the best second games released this year. Mario just has this nice, clean, colorful style that Nintendo knows how to work with, and it's not hampered by an art style New Super Mario Bros. U was. So, yeah, character models are great, animation's fantastic, the lighting is fun. The stages and just, the scope of some of them is, it's a great thing. As you'll see in some of the pictures, I'm sure to post on my Twitter over the next couple of days as I play through this. So, yeah, Super Mario 3D World. Jason, you said you had one more game to go before we wrap up, right?
Yeah. Did you not play A Link Between Worlds yet?
No, what happened, and this was kind of planned and just kind of whatever, is I ordered from Amazon. Amazon doesn't offer release date shipping for Nintendo games for some reason.
Really?
I don't know why. I asked for I originally ordered Mario and Zelda from them, and they said they wouldn't guarantee it. And then I got an email saying it wouldn't be here until next week, Tuesday, I guess. So I'm like, I canceled Mario, I'll pick it up on my way home. And I figured I would just save Zelda, because I wouldn't have time to play both of them anyhow.
Yeah.
And then I could do the Thanksgiving break. So yeah, it's supposed to come in sometime this week, but yeah. We'll get into that next week. Have you played it?
I have not. I was just curious, because I knew you were getting it. But what I have been playing is, this is before my PS4 came in, but I played episode 1 of The Wolf Among Us by Telltale, and it very much picks up the torch from The Walking Dead in terms of gameplay style, and runs with it a little more. It's got similar gameplay in some respects, where it's like a sort of a point-and-click adventure where you're, investigating scenes and stuff. The story is kind of centered around a murder mystery, and it's based on Fables, I think, the comic series.
Yeah.
I am not familiar with Fables at all, but...
it's basically if fairy tales were real.
Yeah.
What happened after the Happy Ever After.
Yeah, so, the concept is... for some reason, all the fairy tale characters, the Big Bad Wolf and Red Riding Hood and, everyone, Snow White, they're all living in this, in the real world now, this town called Fabletown, or Fableton, one of those two. And they use charms so that they look like, or non-human ones look like humans. But they can take their, non-human forms. And it's this interesting premise, they all know each other, and it adds a layer of depth to kind of the story and the interactions, and they all reference their past interactions, because the main character you play is the Big Bad Wolf, so obviously in this world he's the sheriff, so he's, ostensibly like a good guy, but with a dark past, and people reference that. And It does do a bit more in terms of like the action sequences slash. I mean, they're still kind of QTE-ish, but there's a little bit more depth to it. Like, there's one scene where you're chasing this guy through an apartment building, and you know, there's several points where you have to, where you're picking which way to go. You have to react really quickly sometimes. Like, there's one part where you're in a fight with the woodsman, and there's a bunch of different objects you can grab. So it's really dynamic the way scenes can play out. And I'm playing this on PS3, and when I was playing Walking Dead on 360, there were a ton of performance issues. And so far, there's only been a few minor ones on PS3 for Wolf Among Us. I don't know if it's the game or the system I'm playing on, but I've found that to be much smoother.
They probably also have experience with the engine.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's also reflected in the Walking Dead Season 2.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see what else. They also finally added an invert Y control. And then just really quick, I also played Splinter Cell Blacklist, which is a fantastic game. And they do a really good job mashing together the styles of classic Splinter Cell, which is like a lot stealthier, and Conviction's more action-oriented approach. So it's very, the focus is more stealthy, but you do have like the offensive techniques that Conviction introduced. Like, you're more mobile, you have the mark and execute. So that was just a fantastic game. And Spies vs. Mercenaries is so fun. Like, if I didn't get a PS4, like, I would have just been all over that, even more than I was.
Okay. So there you have it. That is a lot of impressions, a lot of games, and I'm sure we have more to talk about. I believe Anthony Martin should be back soon, and maybe we'll have more to talk about then.
Martin will have his VGX. PS4 next week, too.
Yeah, and hopefully, I don't think any of us are buying an Xbox One. I was looking for somebody to give us impressions and thoughts on that. Hopefully we can find somebody next week or the week after about that. The VGX is in 2 weeks, I believe, now. And we'll do something with that. I don't know if we're going to get drunk or something, but usually that comes out with a bunch of news and trailers. And we can talk about, hopefully by then, the system launches have settled down and we have a better idea of how much these failure rates are going and what have you. But, as always, check out the website, www.nerdsontherocks.com. You can find the latest of our game reviews, game thoughts, comic book reviews, news, podcasts, and all that other fun jazz that we put out on a weekly basis. For Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual Worlds in episode 123.